You're tuned in. Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Schmelk, Meadow, you on the phones, 201-939-4513. Folks, no guests today. We figured we should give you a full 60-minute program to get your reaction to the biggest off-season event of the year, the 2018 NFL Draft. So here's how we'll do this, okay? We already got a full bank of calls, or at least we got a full bank of calls ringing. You can still get in. We haven't screened anybody yet. We will do a quick analysis of our thoughts on the draft. We're not going to go too long because we want to get to your call. So, Lance, let me start with this. Big picture first before we kind of give a little thumbnail on each guy. Going into the draft, multiple people send me mock drafts on Twitter that, oh, what do you think about this combination of guys? And I would many times answer, well, guys, I don't know if Will Hernandez will be there at 34. I think that's a little bit of a stretch. It's possible. Lorenzo Carter, no way he's there in round three. He's going to be a second-round pick. And then from an even bigger picture perspective, I expected Kyle Oletta to go in the second or third round based on how quarterbacks get overdrafted and things of that nature. So I think three of the four Giants picks in rounds two, three, and four all got drafted later than I thought they would, which means the Giants got pretty darn good value where they picked the player. And then B.J. Hill, who I didn't do much work on because I didn't do a lot of defensive tackles because Tomlinson, Damon Harrison, oops, mistake, my bad, he was in the top 50 for a lot of people, and they got him around three. So overall, I thought the Giants, the way the board fell to them, allow them to pick some very good players.
And that's the only way you can look at the draft at this point. You can't grade the draft. You need three to 4 years before we truly know whether or not this class is going to provide an immediate impact or a long-term impact. So at this point, the only way to evaluate a draft class is, this is not just for the Giants, John. This is for everybody. You look at where a player was ranked before the draft. You look at their skill set, and then you compare it to where the team got that player.
And what players maybe got picked before them.
Correct. Yeah. So when you hear what Dave Gettleman had to say and what you just laid out, considering most of these guys were projected, some of them to be first-round picks, second-round picks, and where the Giants got them, you know, I think that's really good, solid value. I also think it speaks volumes of Dave Gettleman, at least the way he went about this draft, is it's value, value, and value, as opposed to, well, maybe we need a corner on the back end. So now it's the third round. There's a few corners on the board. Yeah, but these corners we don't have rated very high, so what's the purpose of us taking a corner?
And every GM will say, oh, we're just going to pick the best available guy.
Of course, hear everybody say that.
But it's nonsense. You know, just to look at some of these drafts, the Redskins desperately needed a running back, so they drafted Darius Geis. The Cowboys needed a linebacker. They drafted Leighton Vander Esch. They needed a receiver. They drafted Michael Gallup. So you go down the list, and teams will draft more for need. I mean, for example, the Ravens. Do you really think that they're tight end they picked in round one was the highest-rated player on their board?
No, I find that very hard to believe. I mean, everybody actually, by the way, has been commending Baltimore's draft, and I think they got a lot of good players. I didn't necessarily think a tight end was necessary in the first round.
I agree, and they picked another tight end, Mark Andrews, later on in the draft. And Hayden Hurst was their tight end in the first round.
Hayden Hurst was the first round, yeah.
The name escaped me for a moment. But, so, look, teams will draft for need. Even Jerry Reese, you look back, he drafted for need, too. It just so happened, oh, it was the best guy on the board. Oh, but you really needed a running back. So you should pick David Wilson. Great. So, look, teams do draft for need. And again, that's why I was fooled heading into this, Lance. And then, you know, we'll get to the rest of the things here. Dave Gettleman spoke truth. You know, over the last 3 weeks, he said a few different things. One, you draft for value, which is exactly what they did. They picked the best player regardless of position. Otherwise, you wouldn't have wound up with two defensive tackles. His draft history turned out to be prescient, because they drafted two defensive tackles, a position he drafted a lot in Carolina. And I think kind of the third thing I learned is that he really believes in his three main tenets for winning a championship: running the ball, stopping the run, and affecting the quarterback. Every single draft pick he made in this draft, spare Kyle Oletta, had to do with running the football, Barkley, Hernandez, stopping the run, Hill, McIntosh, affecting the quarterback, McIntosh, Carter. All three of those got included. So, Dave, you know, it's called lying season. Dave Gettleman didn't do much lying in those press conferences. He didn't give away the house or anything, but he was pretty honest in what his goals were and what he was going
to
do.
Well, it's also easy to say that you're picking the best player available because unless the media and the fans know what the board looks like,
correct,
John, you could say that about anything.
Correct.
Hey, we had this guy rated higher. And let's be honest, if you ask all 32 executives, the boards are going to vary. So it's
very, very varied.
So that's why it's not ridiculous for an executive to come out in a press conference and say, this guy was the highest on our board, because clearly it's not going to be the same way that the Redskins set up their board or the Cowboys or the Eagles and so forth. So I think it's easy for that message to get across, but you're looking at how most of the experts and people that have studied a lot of these prospects had players ranked versus where they were taken, and that's how I think you assess good value. But I agree, he had principles in terms of how he built the team, and he went about building the team that way in Carolina too.
Yep.
So he has now transferred those principles over to how he's trying to retool the Giants roster in terms of an emphasis on offensive linemen, an emphasis on defensive linemen. He's talked a hell of a lot about the hog mollies.
Yep.
And I think Will Hernandez fits that bill. And the running game, I mean, he did take Christian McCaffrey in the first round last year, and now he takes Saquon Barkley a year later. And they were both top 10 picks.
And they're both good in the passing game as
yep.
well as the run game too. All right, now let's go through the picks real quick. The first round pick, Saquon Barkley, we've had to debate ad nauseum running back, quarterback, so I'm not going to get into the details of that again. We know it. Lance, the good thing about this is that we're going to know in 4 or 5 years whether or not it was the right decision. We'll see how long Eli Manning can play at a high level. We'll see how well Saquon Barkley not only does, but how he helps the team win football games. If they make a deep run into the playoffs in the next 3 or 4 years and Sam Darnold ends up being a Hall of Famer, guess what? The Giants are going to be happy, because that's why they drafted Saquon Barkley, to try to make a run with Eli Manning, okay? And if they do make a run, and who knows, get to a Super Bowl, win a Super Bowl, it's not going to matter what the other guy does, all right? So I'm not worried about that. But to me, this gets back to what we talked about earlier. Real quick. The reason they didn't pick a quarterback is because they weren't rated nearly as high as Saquon Barkley. The reason they didn't look to trade down is because they had Saquon Barkley rated as by far their highest player on the board. They had a big red bullseye on his name, and they knew that's the guy they wanted. Disagree with it if you like, but like you said, every board is different. And to me, you know, when you prepare for layman's terms, when you prepare for fantasy draft, you break your positions down in tiers. I think Saquon Barkley had his own tier. I think it was his name. It was in bold print. That was the best player, and there wasn't any question about it. And they didn't pass on Sam Darnold because they love Davis Webb and they think he's going to be a Hall of Famer. He might be, and they do like Davis Webb. But they passed on Sam Darnold because Saquon Barkley, in their opinion, was a much better football player, and they did not see this quarterback class the same way as a lot of the other people out there, including yours truly, who loves Sam Darnold. And they know a lot more about this stuff than I do, and that's how they viewed it.
Yeah, and I don't know, listen, if the Browns took Saquon Barkley and Baker Mayfield is still there, you know, we could speculate all we want whether or not Baker Mayfield was the highest-rated quarterback on their board.
On the Giants board?
On the Giants board.
Who knows?
Who knows? But I still feel that Barkley always was, to your point, the top guy. Overall, in terms of any position, period. And you can't take a quarterback for the sake of taking a quarterback. And that's what I think people don't fully grasp and fully understand. Yes, Eli Manning is 37 years old, John. He may play 2 years, he may play 3 years, he may play five. I mean, right now we could all flip a coin. Nobody knows. Nobody knows health. Nobody knows durability. But knock on wood, he's been arguably the most durable quarterback you're going to find in recent and all of NFL history, which is an extremely positive and underrated facet of his game. But just because he may be nearing the end of his career, if you look at all the quarterbacks, and you see Mayfield's off the board, and Darnold, Rosen, Lamar Jackson, Allen are there, and you don't love any of them,
yeah.
Why are you going to say to yourself, there's a chance Eli may only play 3 more years, so we've got to use the number 2 overall pick? Whereas you love Saquon Barkley, and you think he could have a huge impact on the team. By the way, no matter who the hell the quarterback is, John, whether Eli's there or not, Saquon Barkley's the type of player you're going to have to run the ball, whether Eli's there or not. You're going to have somebody to receive the ball in the backfield, whether Eli's there or not, and you're going to need somebody to pass protect, and you're going to need somebody to play special teams. So he can do all of that, whether or not the quarterback stays consistent or changes.
And again, we'll see if they were right about their quarterback class evaluation. We'll see. Yeah. Odds are some of these guys are going to be really good, and some of them are not. That's how quarterback classes go,
yeah.
And we'll see how that goes for the Giants at number 2.
The one other thing I wanted to add, you're right, we are going to see how these quarterbacks develop, but to me it's not so simple, John, where you say, if Josh Rosen lights things up in Arizona, Is it fair to say that if you put Josh Rosen on any other NFL team, that the same exact thing would happen? Now, I'm not saying, and I'm not, I don't want to get into the Tom Brady, but if I took Tom Brady and I gave him the Cleveland Browns talent pool for the last 4 or 5 years and that offensive line, I think Brady's a great quarterback.
Well, you're right.
But are we guaranteed that Brady's going to get to 7 Super Bowls?
And I was having this debate with somebody online when I made my pinned tweet, which I'm going to leave there, is there is no perfect prospect, there is no can't miss player, there is no can't miss guy. Doesn't exist. That player does not exist. Every player has a risk. And then, you know, a couple people got mad at me and they're like, "Well, Tim Duncan was a can't miss guy." And I go, "You're basing it off of results. What happens if Tim Duncan doesn't get drafted by the Spurs and Greg Popovich and goes to some team like the Sacramento Kings or the Knicks or another team that can't manage and he gets bad coach. He's got different players left and right. Maybe he gets hurt. Who knows? And then all of a sudden Tim Duncan doesn't look like Tim Duncan that we see right now. So you're right. It's nurture versus nature.
Yeah, the environment aids the stock and success of the player. And people, I think, tend to just dismiss that as part of the conversation. So all of these quarterbacks may pan out, but I'm sure the reason why a number of them who do pan out, it's going to be as a result of the talent that was around them, the environment, the coaching. And if you take that person out of that environment, to me, there's no guarantee it happens elsewhere.
Bingo. All right, let's just because we're talking quarterbacks here, let's jump to Kyle Loletta in round number four real quick. I was surprised he was still there in round four. I thought he'd be a second or third round pick. He was actually linked to the Patriots a lot as a Jimmy Garoppolo type. You know, good in short and intermediate, very accurate, smart guy, tall to see over the line of scrimmage. One knock on him is his arm strength. Pat Shurmur doesn't think that's an issue. Pro Football Focus did have his deep ball accuracy as one of the worst in the class, though. So those are something – that's something we'll have to kind of look at as we go along. And remember, folks, no prospect is perfect. If he was a perfect quarterback prospect, guess what? He wouldn't have been available in the third or fourth round. So it is what it is. And again, much like I said before, the Giants – didn't pass on Sam Darnold because they're sure Davis Webb's the next guy. They didn't draft Kyle Loletta because they don't think Davis Webb is the next guy. They like Davis Webb. They're a fan. Bottom line, folks, I've said this since the beginning. This is mathematics. It's probabilities. Would you rather have one middle-round pick with a chance to be Eli Manning's successor or two middle-round picks where you only need one out of the two to succeed to be Eli Manning's successor? You'd rather have the two. It's the most important thing this franchise will do over the next 5 years is figure out who the next guy is after Eli. Now they have two shots at it instead of one. And to me, that's a good thing.
Yeah, and it also aids the quarterback room, and it gives you competition. Why should you hand and crown anybody the backup quarterback without a little competition, especially somebody that's young and hasn't had any regular season reps? The other thing that I want to utilize is I like to compare to what other teams are doing. And here's the perfect example, John. The Steelers have Ben Roethlisberger, who coincidentally was in the same draft class as Eli Manning a few picks later. What did the Steelers do?
Mason Rudolph, third round.
What did they do last year? They drafted Joshua Dobbs, also as a middle round pick. So they got two quarterbacks.
When did he get picked by them last year?
Dobbs was
fifth
a fourth
or sixth?
Rounder.
Fourth rounder.
Okay.
Good call.
Dobbs was out of Tennessee. And I like Dobbs. I mean, very smart guy. I remember, what was he, an aerodynamics major or whatever the hell
yeah,
it was.
Yeah, he was. That's right.
Yeah,
I mean,
and he didn't have enough of an opportunity because, you know, knock on wood, Big Ben has remained durable at least this past season. They also have Landry Jones on contract, and he was nearing free agency. They brought him back. We'll see whether or not he pans out. He's had mixed results. So what the Steelers are saying to themselves is Big Ben, like Eli Manning, is up there in age. He's a little bit younger. And they want to have an opportunity to maximize the ability to find the successor. So Dobbs and Rudolph, let the best man win. Loletta and Webb, let the best man win. I think it's a very similar game plan that both of these organizations have adopted. And none of them have reached, John. I mean, the Steelers could have said, you know, Big Ben, he's gotten hurt over the last few years. Remember, he's talked more about retirement than Eli Manning has in terms of the court of public opinion and speaking to the media. So the Steelers could have said, you know, let's package a bunch of draft picks. Let's try to get maybe up in the first round. Maybe we should go after Allen. Maybe we should go after Rosen, especially when those guys were falling.
Maybe you pick Mason Rudolph in round two.
Correct. You look to get him a little bit sooner because there's the urgency and the fear that Ben Roethlisberger is only going to play another year. And they didn't do that. They waited and they felt that it was good value and they took the quarterback. But it's the same exact thing as the Giants. Two young quarterbacks drafted in back-to-back years who are going to compete. They may become the successors. They may not. They just want to have options.
And look what the Patriots have done with Brady. Garoppolo, Mallett, Castle. Go down the list.
Brissett.
Brissett, another great one. Thank you. they've been trying to get guys in there to see, and Brady just keeps playing.
Exactly.
What is he, 42 now? He just keeps going. So yeah. You're absolutely right again. Loletta, to me, feels like a guy that Shermer would really like. He's smart, good in short mid-range. He sounds like a West Coast quarterback. I don't think we need to spend much time with Will Hernandez. We're happy he was there. We didn't think he was going to be. It's a guy we talked about a lot. He complements your first-round pick in Saquon Barkley. He moves people. He's a good athlete for his size. Yeah, maybe he struggles with some smaller speed rushers sometimes. That's fine. Again, nobody's perfect. But, again, it'll help the Giants run the football, and it gives them a third new offensive line starter. And we said this offseason, we thought they needed three new starting offensive linemen. Well, Solder, Omame, and now Will Hernandez.
And he's mainly been a left guard during his career, but Omame has started out at right guard. So they said they're going to move Hernandez to both spots. They're going to prepare him there, and they'll see what the ideal fit is. But you're right. I think that this allows them to have more competition on the offensive line and another option. It's identical to what Minnesota did last offseason with Pat Shurmur there, John.
And he mentioned that at the press conference.
Yeah, he did. And we even talked about this before Pat Shurmur brought it up. If you just look at what he went through in Minnesota, they had offensive line issues. You know, they brought in two free agents in Riley Reiff and Mike Remmers, yep. And then they drafted Elflein as the center. And this is what the Giants did. They brought in two free agents in Solder and Omame, and they drafted Hernandez. Not the same positions, but
I think they were both second-round picks. Was Elflein a second-round pick?
No, he was
third round pick. He was a third or fourth? Okay.
Yeah. So, but the point is one in the draft, two in free agents.
And value happened to meet need there too, which is a bonus because the Giants need an offensive lineman. And I would not, and again, I think Hernandez was probably the highest graded player on the board too. They had him as a first round player, and so did I. So that makes sense to me. As for the round three pick, Lorenzo Carter, a raw guy. Unbelievable athlete. He tore up the combine. His RAS score was literally the best of any linebacker in the last 30 years, a 10 out of 10. Not a lot of production at Georgia Lance, but again, need met value. Most people thought he would be a second-round pick. Some people even mocked him at the end of the first round before the draft started. So the Giants linebackers coach Bill McGovern and the pass-rushing coach, I guess that would be Kari Emanuel when they do their third-down stuff later in the week, will get their hands on him and try to develop those athletic skills into a more consistent pass rusher to help replace JPP.
Well, I think he's athletic enough to also be used off the line and
on
the line.
Absolutely.
And I think that was appealing, John.
And he was used that way in Georgia, too,
correct.
By the way.
Yeah. And that's what I think that they also looked. Now, that doesn't mean that it was need. It was great value. But I'm sure when Dave Gettleman had James Betcher look at the film and he had the two coaches you just mentioned, I'm sure they said to themselves, all right, move into a 3-4 scheme. We may want him at times to play on the line. We may want him to play off the line, and this is somebody that we don't have to now all of a sudden think about how he'll adapt, considering he was already used that way at Georgia.
Dude, who reminds me of? Hassan Reddick, who the Cardinals drafted last year,
guy.
A raw pass rusher. He played with the hand down. He played standing up. He did a little bit of both. Super-duper athlete at the combine, just like Carter was. Not a lot of production at college, a little bit raw. And James Betcher figured out a way to use him last year. So to me, I thought that was a good comp between those two guys.
And he came from Temple where he was moved around, to your point. So I think that makes sense. I've heard a lot of people also compare him to Chandler Jones in terms of maybe the role he'll play with the Giants.
The role, but not the player.
Correct. I don't see the comparison in terms of the player. But the role, I'm sure down the road, maybe we could start talking about that.
And then two defensive tackles, B.J. Hill in round three. We'll kind of put these guys into the same box here. And round five, they picked R.J. McIntosh out of Miami. B.J. Hill was out of NC State, one of their four starting defensive linemen that got drafted in this draft. That's quite the group. Little bit different players. Again, both are kind of one gap, get up the field guys. To me, B.J. Hill reads more of a first and second down run defender, while McIntosh is more of a sub-package nickel three technique where he's going to try to get after the passer a little bit, a little quicker, a little bit more athletic. Not that Hill's a bad athlete. He's good. But again, he's more of a run stuffer. McIntosh is more of a guy that's going to affect the quarterback a little bit more. And Dave Gettleman and Shermer, I forget which one, made the point where, look, the Eagles won last year by having eight defensive linemen. We're going to roll people in. We're going to roll people out. And I think that's what they're trying to develop here. So even though maybe you didn't think they needed a defensive tackle with Snacks and Dalvin Tomlinson and Robert Thomas, they want to have a rotation of guys here, so somebody is always fresh.
Yeah, it was Gettleman who pointed that out because he kept bringing up Brandon Graham, Fletcher Cox, Chris Long. I mean, let's be honest. The Eagles had a mammoth group of guys that kept fresh throughout the course of the game because Schwartz didn't have to worry about it.
I think McIntosh, in the base defense, I think he's more of a defensive end in the 3-4 base than a defensive tackle, while I think Hill is probably more the nose tackle.
Well, just from looking at them, I think McIntosh was known as more of a penetrator than Hill in terms of getting to the quarterback a little more. Their sack numbers don't jump off the page. They both had single-digit sacks over the course of their careers. So I agree with you there. You know, Hill was the nose tackle at NC State, primarily lined up over the center. McIntosh moved around a little bit more, so I could definitely see that. I think what's also interesting about both of these players in particular that jumped out to me from watching them, John, very effective in getting their hands up and deflecting passes.
Yeah, I didn't notice
when not getting to the quarterback.
Interesting.
Now, that doesn't mean it's going to transfer over, but also utilized on special teams. They've had some block kicked opportunities. So that's what I think also probably was appealing to both of these prospects. Because let's face it, when you pick some of these guys late in the rounds, like a McIntosh, he's going to have to play special teams. He's not necessarily automatically going to be starting day one.
Want to take some calls?
Appealing. Absolutely.
All right, that's the reaction of Lance and I, and let's get yours at 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. I'll try to keep an eye on that as well. We got a full bank of calls, so let's see who's first up. And I don't have my caller sheet up here. Let me see. Hold on 1 second. I'm getting it up. This is my fault. I know. I'm unprepared. I'm a joke. Blah, blah, blah.
I have it up if you'd like to cheat here.
Now it's too late. Now it's up. You should have said something earlier.
Well,
Matt,
I like to see you skirmish a little.
I squirmed all right. Let's go to Matt in Rhode Island. He's been holding the longest. What's up, Matt?
You caught me in mid-swallow of a piece of watermelon.
Well, don't worry about it. I didn't even have the calls up, so don't feel bad.
Yeah. The both of you unprepared.
Yes.
All right,
yes.
Guys. Great coverage over the weekend and throughout the entire draft process. Good luck to you these next few months. I don't know what the hell you're going to talk about.
We'll figure something out.
We'll have plenty to talk about. Trust me. You guys will keep us busy and gals as well.
Exactly.
Trust me. Yes.
I'll be listening. You know, overall, was it my ideal draft? No, I was big in the trade down camp just because of the value of the position, but all that stuff is over now. The only thing you can do now is look at the team and where it stands now with what they have. And I think they did a good job kind of bolstering the physicality of the team. One of you said it earlier. Everything was kind of, besides the Loletta pick, was running the ball or stopping the run or getting after the passer. So, you know, those are kind of the three staples of football. One thing, I know you guys are younger. You're around my age, analytic guys. How did you feel about Gettleman kind of crapping on the whole idea of analytics?
Well, he didn't crap on analytics. For lack of a better word, he challenged the idea that the running back position doesn't have value.
Yeah.
That is specifically what he kind of had a concern with. And I understand the perspective from this side of the equation. Yes, looking at the numbers, the actual process of running the football doesn't tend, simply by the math, to impact points scored and winning or losing like the passing game does. Look, that's mathematics. It's hard to refute that. But Barkley, for one, affects the passing game as a receiver. But more importantly, and I think this is Gettleman's point, and even the guys at Pro Football Focus we had on a couple weeks ago, we asked him this question, and they said, yeah, John, you're right. There's no way to calculate what the presence of a player like a Barkley, like a Ezekiel Elliott, like a Todd Gurley, like an Adrian Peterson, what effect their mere presence on the field has on a defense and defensive coaches in terms of what personnel they put on the field, where they put them, and how that affects how the defense plays the offense. Like, what's the effect of having an eighth man in the box on the Giants' passing game? They don't have a way to calculate that effect yet. So I think that's why Gettleman doesn't believe in the devaluing of a running back position, because he believes the presence of the running back on the field can help your team in so many more ways just as compared to just looking at the numbers in the rushing yards column. And I think that's how he looks at it.
Well, and even people that invest in analytics.
Thank you, man. Appreciate the call, man. Good stuff.
Can only be a complementary piece to everything else that you look at.
Right.
You know, the eye test is an extremely important facet of evaluating a player. You know, you can only get bottled down in the numbers so much. So, you know, you look at Saquon Barkley, and you also realize that he's more than a running back. So he doesn't even fit necessarily under the umbrella, John, of being the typical running back in the shelf life of X amount of years that they normally last, because
right.
you're going to use him as a receiver. You may use him on special teams and so forth. So, you know, not everybody can be neatly put under one category. So that's why I don't even think Barkley is worthy of just describing and talking about under that running back umbrella.
He's a weapon.
Yeah. So
he's a weapon.
So if you just then look at the analytics of running backs, does that do justice to a guy like Saquon Barkley?
And that was my point.
Yeah. And that's what I think Gettleman was also
I agree.
Hinting at. And I don't want to get completely off topic because you know how the NBA is my favorite subject. But, you know, the Sixers have been a very analytical team.
Sure.
Now they're first reaping the benefits of maybe bringing in guys who fit whatever analytics they were studying. Took a long time for all those analytics to start to yield results. The Houston Rockets have also been a very analytical team mm-hmm. because of Daryl Morey, their general manager, team that loves to shoot the three ball. Rockets don't have a lot of trophies that I've seen lately. So analytics can only get you so far is my point.
Well, remember, too, I think the Sixers, too, you know, the analytics in the NBA say shoot the three.
Yeah.
Their best player can't hit a three-point shot if his life depended on it. Simmons, you can't.
Yeah, no, I'm
can't
with you.
You.
Well, I mean, he's young. We'll see if he develops shot over time. But right
they've,
now,
but they've figured out. It has the point though. You can win in different ways.
Indeed.
You know
Big
what I
up.
Mean? And I think that's the point I'm trying to make. And,
yeah.
and I, again, that's why Pro Football Focus, even though they had, I think they had Barkley as their 11th player on their big board, they still had him as a first round pick, despite the analytics on the running back, because of the stuff you can't calculate. But more important, his ability in the passing game. He had again. He is a weapon in the passing game, folks. I'm going to bring this up for a second here because I have a few numbers that I can't bring up because I'm not logged into the server.
Boy,
but
a game today, really.
He had, I believe, 8 or 9 catches of 20 or more yards last year. He had 50 catches for more than 600 yards, more than 10 yards per reception. And his ability to make big plays. The Giants have struggled on the ground making big plays this entire year. The entirety of the last half decade. And I'm going to give you a couple numbers on his big play ability, Lance, because I think it's really, really stark. The Giants in the last 5 years, starting in 2013, these are their runs of 20 or more yards, okay? 2013, 4, 14, 4, 15, 8, 16, 7, 17, 8. Barkley had 19 rushes of 20 yards or more as a sophomore, 14 as a junior, okay?
And he'd have a great offensive line, by the way, too.
Through the air, he made big plays as well. As I mentioned, last year he had his last 2 years at Penn State, he had 15 catches of 20 or more yards. This isn't a checkdown guy. This is a guy who can go split out wide. He can run slot receiver routes. We had James Franklin, his head coach, on the other day. And he said we would run picks for him. He'd run picks for other guys. We'd get him upfield in isolation situations. You can motion him out of the backfield, and that kind of tells you what defense the defensive is running. Because if a guy follows him, it's man. If they don't, it's zone. It kind of passes things on to you. So those are the types of impacts I think that people don't realize, but general managers and coaches can really appreciate.
Well, and the ability to shed tackles, John. Even when it looks like the play is going to break down, to find a way to wiggle out of it and gain additional yardage after contact. All of those things play a role in terms of big playmaking ability.
Last year, Lance, he had 10 rushes of over 40 yards the last 2 years, okay? And receptions of 6 receptions of 40 or more yards. Last year, he catches a 43 yards, 46 yards, 85 yards, and 42 yards. That's not a dump down guy. That's a big play guy, which, by the way, talk analytics. According to the analytics, big plays in the NFL do impact winning and losing and scoring points an awful lot, and Barkley is a big play guy. Back to the calls. Let's go to Jimmy and Rose Hill up in the Bronx. What's up, Jimmy? How are you? You had a Fordham player drafted yesterday. How about that?
and the offensive tackle signed a free agency contract with the with the Texans, a kid out of Staten Island by
nice.
Anthony Coyle.
Nice.
So, yeah, it was good to be a Ram fan, that's for sure, and it's good to be a Giants fan, absolutely. I called last week, Lance might remember, I'm the guy, I'm a worshiper of George Young. I mean, I've been around long enough, been around since the earth cooled.
Is this Paul?
So I go all the way back to
Paul
to
in
Georgia.
Another body, yeah. No, I remember that phone call. Oh, we're still here, Jimmy, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. So, anyway, in evaluating the draft, Lance, I think it was you that was, you know, was talking about it earlier in terms of players and just their, you know, their overall impact. And sometimes you just have to take a guy. And I think Barkley falls into that category of, if you watch enough football, there's lots of good players out there, but every now and then some kid comes across the screen that just jumps out. He flashes. You see him all the time. And I remember one thing George said back to the 81 draft. There were 28 teams at the time. He said, thank God. He said 24 of the 28 teams had Lawrence Taylor, absolutely far and away best player in the draft. He said, thank God of the four that the New Orleans Saints was one of the four that didn't agree. I think Barkley falls into that category. One other thing, too, about the team and the structure is a real good chance that when the offensive line takes the field, there'll be five new starters. And when you think about what Gettleman said when he came in terms of addressing the offensive line, that's addressing the offensive line if you've got five new starters. So, and I'd look to this kid Wheeler at right tackle. I wouldn't fall asleep on him. I think he played enough last year to show that he'd be a farm.
He's an option. I mean, yeah, they also have Adam Biznavati. Don't forget, they drafted him. There's a few guys that certainly could be in the mix, and Eric Flowers, too, depending on what happens with him. So, I mean, those are three young guys that they could very well use to compete at the right tackle spot. But I think you do bring up an excellent point, Jimmy, that, you know, I didn't necessarily think that there was potential for all five starting offensive linemen to change. But now that we look at it on paper, it is very possible they enter week one of the 2018 season with completely new players at every single position.
Yeah, I mean, was Jones the starting center last year at the first game of the year, or didn't he come in during the season?
Because Richburg was placed on IR later in the season, so it was Richburg who started.
Richburg did start the year at center.
Yeah.
Right, so there you go. You know, your two guards, left tackle, and unless Flowers, you know, wins the job at right tackle, there'll be five new starters.
There will be, but even if Flowers is a starter, you're still changing his position. So you're essentially still changing the five spots, to your point.
They revamped it. You know, they revamped the entire offensive line, which everybody said we had to do, and this man did it. So I'm optimistic. I guess the Lauletta pick, you wonder about, but then you guys brought up a great point. The Steelers, if you got to emulate an organization in terms of, you know, how they operate, and you mentioned the fact, which I didn't realize, the Steelers have drafted two potential guys, and we're following the same blueprint. And it makes sense. So give two middle rounders, and we'll see. So I'm happy. Can't wait for the season to start. And every time I listen to you guys, I learn something new, and I
thank you, Jimmy.
Pumped.
Well, appreciate that.
Appreciate the call, buddy.
Yeah,
good
thanks
stuff.
For weighing in.
Right, thanks for
care.
Being a part of the show. And again, folks, they didn't not draft a quarterback because of Davis Webb. They didn't draft a quarterback because they liked Barkley better and he was a more highly graded player on their board. They liked Davis Webb. But why not have – look, Ron Wolf used to say draft a quarterback every year and you hope one sticks, right? That's how we went from Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers. It's not a bad strategy. All right? 201-939-4513. Let's go to Kevin in Orlando. Kevin, what's up, pal?
Hey, how's it going, guys? I want to help you guys out because I want fans to know Dave Gettleman has forgotten more about football than any of us have ever known or will hope to know.
That's true.
But people need to pump the brakes before. And I'm not – generally, people have been pretty positive about what they've done. But if people think like, oh, I know better, or they did this was bad, or they're stupid or whatever – I got to realize that, like, we're just fans. We don't know anything, really, at the end of the day.
No, Kevin, I get it, but at the same time, you're a fan. Everyone has a right to their opinion. That's why it's fun. That's why we're here.
True. But also another thing to point out, Dave Gettleman has now gotten us players at left tackle, linebacker, and running back. And those are the best players this team has had in about 20 years at each of those respective positions. Three positions that us fans have been screaming about for about that long. And in one offseason, he's already done that.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't dismiss Brandon Jacobs and Ahmad Bradshaw. I mean, those guys were fairly productive the last time
I checked.
But overall talent,
yes,
Saquon Barkley.
I'm not saying we had bad players, but far and away, I think the best player at those respective positions.
And that's fair. If you want to qualify like that, I don't disagree with you.
I'm not sure how much better Solder is than, say, you know, David Deal or Pettigrew in their primes. I think he's better, but I'm not quite sure that's a grand slam. But you make a good point. Yeah. No argument. We're on board.
I want to piggyback also, too, what you guys talked about, the positional value, where I get that. But at the end of the day, all that matters is how many rings do you have? Position of value is great to mold and the guide and how you should build a team. But it's not a strict rule that can never be broken. And the perfect example is what you guys, you can't quantify when you have Barkley on the field, where if you had Nick Chubb instead. Do you have another guy in the box because Barkley's there because you know you don't know what he's going to do with him? Where Nick Chubb, you're like, more than likely he's going to run it. No offense to Nick Chubb per se, but I'm saying you can't quantify those type of things. Everyone wants to look at a PFF score or a box score and just think, oh, we're paying this guy too much. That's poppycock.
Or hogwash, if yes. You prefer Dave Gettleman language.
That's true. Go with the hog molly hogwash storyline, yes.
Sure. And then last thing I want to say is, I'm finally excited now because I'm 45 years old that this team will be able to run the ball on 3rd and 2 and 3rd and 3. No more of the Eli Manning jump ball down the sideline for 15 yards, which drove me absolutely bonkers.
Now, Kevin, hold on one second. I want to warn you a little bit. Saquon Barkley's not going to be your short yardage back. I'm just warning you. That's going to be Jonathan Stewart.
I'm aware of that, but okay. Lance can run behind this offensive line.
Well, Kevin, hold on.
I wouldn't go that far.
The offensive lineman is the offensive line is improved. Okay.
Yeah.
Last I checked, they don't have one Pro Bowler on the entire line.
Let's
okay. Pump the brakes a little bit on that. Okay.
We can run it. I'm not asking for 15 yards a carry.
Okay.
Kevin, absolutely.
Listen, the line has changed. On paper, it's improved, but we have yet to see these guys on the field.
Thank you, Kevin. Appreciate the call.
I mean, you got to put things in perspective and appreciate the phone call. And even though there are new names, you know, this group has yet to mold, has yet to build chemistry with one another. So, you know, let's see what happens. But certainly, Dave Gettleman came in, he evaluated the roster, he realized it needed to improve, and he's done that. So
it's much better than it was.
You can't fault him for that.
It's much better than it was. How good it's going to be? We'll have to wait and find out.
Remains to be seen.
That's a beauty. That's why, folks, that's why we all love sports. Do you know why? Eventually, the guys line up, and you find out what happens.
Yes.
And the proof will be in the pudding. And all this talk, you'll find out who's right, who's wrong, and how everything goes down. That's why sports is fun.
The other thing I wanted to bring up, just related to the quarterback position, another team, by the way, the Chargers, Philip Rivers also in the Eli Manning draft class. Cardale Jones is his backup, who was acquired in a trade with Buffalo, and he was a mid- to late-round pick.
Sixth or seventh, I think.
He was Cardale. A fifth-rounder, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, I can look it up. And then they just signed,
you might have been right.
They just signed Geno Smith. So do the Chargers have a guaranteed successor for Philip Rivers right now?
They do not. Not even close.
The Steelers don't have a guaranteed successor for Ben Roethlisberger. We're in agreement there?
Sure.
The Giants don't have a guaranteed successor for Eli Manning, meaning it's up in the air.
Sure.
So all three of those teams, my point, is you have quarterbacks in the same age bracket, and every single team.
How about Drew Brees?
Drew Brees is another good one.
How about Tom Brady?
Yes, Brady. Those are two. I tweeted out those five teams. I'm just going over the top, man. Now, Drew Brees' backups are even more entertaining.
Yeah.
Yes. There's a guy, Taysom Hill.
You know what? And apparently Peyton loves Taysom Hill. That's what I hear. Sean Payton loves him, but he's an undrafted free agent. Unless he's Tony Romo.
Yes. So, the point is, you have five quarterbacks all in the same age bracket. Not one team can say they know what's going to happen when those guys hang it up. So how are the Giants are in uncharted territory? That's my question. How are they on an island and everybody else is all set when those respective quarterbacks retire?
Mark in New York City. Mark, what's up, pal?
Oh, my God, guys. You guys are so great.
Thank you.
You guys don't even have to do much talking. I swear, I just want to hear you guys speak. This is such a great honor to talk to you guys at this moment.
Thanks for tuning in.
Don't go nuts.
Man.
I would like to
thank, start off, this would be real quick for me. I'd like to thank the old regime for all of the offensive weapons that we still have. That's a must.
Yep.
I'd like to thank the GM now for all the moves that he's made. I'm glad he didn't give up on Eli. I love the O-line. I love every draft pick. I also believe that this is a pass of the torch in a way. Like, this is not Eli's team anymore, but that's not an insult. Because when I seen with all the moves that we made, I had this gut feeling about it reminding me of the Elway in 97-98. Now, I'm not comparing Eli and Elway because Eli had already won chips where Elway had to wait. I'm saying to the point where, you know what, you didn't have to pass it to win it right now. This is just personally out to Flowers. Mr. Flowers, please come in and play right tackle for me. this O-line, you will be smiling. All those woes you had, brother, when the O-line was terrible, is not your fault. You were 20 years old. You literally, if Beattie was there, there's no telling what we would have looked like. So, you know, Eli hasn't even seen an O-line. But Eli is the evolved person of the 07 version. Like, that was the O-line we needed, the defense we needed, and Eli didn't know how to check into a run or pass. He was still young then. That 2011 season when we didn't have a run game, but Eli knew how to check and do what he had to do, ladies and gentlemen, this is both of those years combined, in my opinion. I love you guys, man.
Thank you, Mark.
All right, Mark.
You take it easy. Wow.
You too, buddy.
It was good talking to you. Thank you for being
a fan
of the show.
I mean, he mentioned...
I think he's overrating us a little bit, but that's okay.
Well, he brought up Will Beattie. I love the phone call, and then he brought up Will Beattie, and then look who's on the phone line. We'll get to him. Yeah, that's the unfortunate tease of the program, by the way. Right now, Charlie is, like, foaming at the mouth. He's like, oh, my God, somebody else mentioned Will Beattie. I don't know what to do with myself. But anyway, getting back to the point.
No, Mark's, what was your point?
Mark's 100%. No, Mark said you don't have to just throw the football in today's league. Mm-hmm. So the top 10 teams in rushing yardage per game last year, it's the who's who of who made the playoffs, John. That's who it is. The two teams that were in the Super Bowl, the Eagles and the Patriots, the Eagles were third in the NFL last year in rushing yards per game. The Patriots were 10th. So I don't want to hear that, you know, well, it's a pass-happy league, quarterback, quarterback, quarterback. No, you pound the football, you're going to get in. Jacksonville was number one. They made it to the AFC Championship game. Carolina was fourth, made it to the playoffs. Saints were fifth. They made it to the playoffs. The Bills were sixth. They made it to the playoffs. Minnesota Vikings were seventh. They made it to the NFC Championship game. Eighth was the Rams. They made it to the playoffs. Ninth was the Chiefs. They made it to the playoffs. I rest my case.
10th, the Patriots, like you mentioned.
Right.
And the only team in that top 10 that didn't were the Cowboys, who finished second.
9-7, though.
They finished over 500
and 9-7. And we're talking about a borderline playoff team. I mean, Elliott doesn't get suspended. That's the difference, maybe.
Now, the analytics people would argue that, well, those teams have leads in games, so they're running the ball more late, and they have good quarterbacks, and that allows the running game to succeed. But that goes to Dave Gettleman's belief in the importance of running the football. And that's why... Remember, folks, what analytics are, and look, I have a lot of respect for my analytics, Lance does too, but they're a piece of the pie here, okay? You put the numbers into a formula, and the formula tells you, you know, how effective a certain thing might be or what the impact of that certain thing might be. But a human still creates that formula. So maybe the formula isn't done properly. You know what I mean? So these things aren't in stone. I think they're important. I think you look at them as a piece.
Yeah.
But I do think there is a lot of anecdotal evidence that suggests that running the football might be more important than what the analytics say. And again, Barkley's more than that. He's not just here as a runner. If you were just picking a runner, yeah, Darius Geis is fine. Ronald Jones is fine. Those guys might even be better pure runners than Barkley. But he does so much else, which is why it makes a little bit of a difference.
Well, and the other thing I'll add to that is, to the last caller's point, he was referencing when the Giants won Super Bowls in 07 and 11. The common theme, John, if you recall, is inconsistency throughout the season in running the ball. But once the playoffs started...
More in 11 than 7.
Yeah, okay, I'll give you, because Bradshaw had some nice games down the stretch. But 11, things didn't register with that running game until the playoffs came around.
The worst running team in the league.
So the point is... There's ways to counter that, but when you get to the playoffs, if you don't run the football, good luck.
It's hard.
Good luck. Good luck trying to
win. And I actually liked his Elway comparison from 97-98, trying to win at the end of Elway's career by giving him Terrell Davis, giving him help on defense. He doesn't have to do quite as much. I think that is the formula looking for with Eli Manning now. That's it. Where he doesn't have to, you know, Eli doesn't have to carry the team like he did in 11. And by the way, Eli did not carry the team in 07, but he did carry the team in 2011. They won that Super Bowl because of the job Eli and that passing game did. That's what got them into the playoffs. That's what got them to the Super Bowl. Even though they didn't score a ton of points against the Niners or in the Super Bowl, the reason they got there was because of that passing game. Eli had the best year of his career, okay? He's not going to have to do that now, okay? The same way Elway could do it from time to time, but didn't have to in those final 2 years in Denver. So I actually think that was a pretty good comparison.
Yeah, I mean, I would even throw in Peyton Manning with the Broncos, too. I mean, with what they leaned on with the running game and the defense
in
that
year.
In
his final year, yes. The year they got
to
the Super
Bowl, where he put up all the records, correct.
Correct.
But the final year, it was, hey, Peyton, we understand the arm may not be what it was. We're pounding the football. We're playing defense. And
that's
what's going to get us there.
And I think Eli's better than Peyton was in his last year.
I wholeheartedly agree. Well, I mean, Peyton went through four neck surgeries, so
right.
I would expect Eli to be in better shape.
Correct. 201-939-4513. I know this guy's excited. He got his splash. It shakes.
Man.
Doesn't sound excited.
I want to cry, man.
What?
I want to cry. Dave Gettleman, listen. If Reese was my boy OG Steve's uncle, Dave Gettleman is my grandfather. Okay? He is my grandfather. He has my mind frame, and I love him. You can't tell me nothing wrong about Gettleman. Ever. If when
ever,
one offseason,
wow,
he fixed everything that I've been complaining about to y'all for 5 years.
You're not wrong.
5 years I've been saying these things over and over and over again to y'all and Giants fans. And a lot of y'all have not listened. Not you hosts. I'm not talking about y'all. I'm talking about the Giant fans that sat there and want this quarterback and want to replace Eli. It is not the time for that. It is time to win now. Win now. Let's go all out with Eli. Let's support Eli. Let's do that. And I love what you said about it's not being Eli's team anymore, because that's it. It's time for it, the torch to be passed, and now it's going to be Barkley's. He is the face of the team now.
Well, Little Shakes, hold on,
forward,
real quick, real
not
quick.
Not right now.
Shakes, real quick.
Forward, maybe next year, he's the face.
Okay, that's fine. Busy, yeah, because okay. I honestly
he's
still think
face.
It's Eli's team. I still think right now it's Eli's team. The same way, I think if you go back and you look at 97 and 98 with the Broncos, it was still John Elway's team. Now, it wasn't John Elway and Eli Manning and everybody else. It was John Elway and Eli Manning and a bunch of guys with them on the top line, and I think that's kind of what you're looking at now.
Exactly, and that's what my point is. The torch is being passed.
Being, yes, correct, correct.
And it's right. And Gettleman is doing right. And like y'all said, everything that he has said up to this point, he has been honest and real with us as fans, and I appreciate it. Another thing y'all said, and I agree as well, and I was talking to my boy E about it, the letter. My boy E loves the letter. He says that, yo, that was his sleeper. All well and dandy. What has this done is now it gives Eli the time to go out the way he wants to go out, and when he eventually wants to go out, we got two options to look at to be his successor, and that's a better odds than just having one.
Correct. Yeah.
So all these quarterbacks, you can't, why are you going to double up in the mid-round and you're supposed to get a quarterback early in the first round and try to replace him? It's not the success rate. It's a success rate when you got two guys sitting there learning under this guy, and one of them is going to outshine the other.
Hey, look, Shakes, in fairness, if you had to put me on a lie detector, in my personal opinion, I think probably Darnold has a better chance of being a franchise quarterback than either Webb or Loletta, but it's a lot closer than it is with just Darnold versus Webb, and that's my point. Once you decide Barkley's your guy, okay, it's a separate decision. Once you decide you have to take Barkley because he's that good, and that's the decision Gettleman made, it's a good thing to add the quarterback later than to not add the quarterback later. And I don't. And you're right, I've gotten that too, where fans have complained, well, why would you just waste two picks on middle-round quarterbacks? It's not a waste. Yes, is the success rate of middle-round quarterbacks small? Yes, but let's say it was 10 to 15% if you want to look at the base numbers here. If you combine both guys, you're looking at a 30% shot. Let's say Darnold's a 60 to 70% shot. But, you know, with these guys, you never know. It's still a better rate than one by themselves. So I don't understand why the people that wanted to pass on Barkley are then also mad that they drafted Loletta. It doesn't make any sense to me because, like you said, two is better than one. I don't get how you could want Darnold and then be mad about Loletta.
Real quick, they're not chopped livers neither.
Right.
Webb or Loletta, they both won the MVP back-to-back seasons in the Super Bowl.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, so we're not talking about chopped livers here. They're going to learn under Eli, and the best man is going to win. Now, my other thing is,
To me, there is no holes on this team. To me.
I wouldn't go that far.
Chase, there are two.
I understand if it's an argument, and we're going to get to these arguments all weeks and months long till the season goes on. But to me, there is no holes. There is a lot of bodies that is going to compete at every position.
No doubt about that. Yeah, that's valid.
But Shakes, there are two things. One, starting right tackle. Two, your third corner. Those are the two things that I worry about.
And in terms of question marks on the roster. Like y'all said earlier, you got three guys that's going to sit there and compete for that job. Three. Okay? Yeah. Now, Eric Flowers, y'all know I still have belief in him. Come in, win that job, show that you are good. And now our whole line is set incomplete. To me, there is no holes on this team. Now, the concern I have is who's going to fulfill that X receiver spot. Because we know Shepard is the slot. We know Odell is the Y. Who's going to fill that X? Is Lattimore? Is Rudolph? Lewis?
Roger Lewis, yeah.
One of those guys going to have to step up and fulfill that spot. But everything else I'm looking at, I don't see no holes to me. Now, my last point, and I'm a go off on this. Now, I said I was right about everything, and I was. But listen, I did top 10 rankings of every position. Let me tell you what Gettleman did for me. He gave me my number one running back that I had ranked. He gave me my number two guard. He gave me my number four outside linebacker, and he gave me my number eight quarterback and my number eight defensive tackle. And what he has done is brought back physicality and speed to this team. If y'all look at BJ Hill, look at how quick he is off the snap.
He is. Yep.
It's ridiculous. I'm telling y'all, Gettleman is my grandfather. I'm leaving out with that. I appreciate for y'all for taking
thanks,
my call.
Thanks, Shakes. Grandpa Gettleman for Shakes. I like it.
He certainly has old school philosophy, so I don't think Gettleman's going to disagree that he's been around the league long enough that he doesn't necessarily feel the trenches is an overlooked facet of the game. It's still extremely important, and you can tell based on what he did with Carolina as well as what he's doing with the Giants now.
And by the way, I think Odell can play X wide receiver spot,
too. Yeah, you
can
move him around.
He's not a Z. I mean, he's a guy that can go up and get it and I think play that spot. And I also don't think I know under McAdoo there wasn't a true X receiver like you had under Gilbride with Nixon Burris and things like that. I'm not sure how Shermer's going to run that, how important that is with his version of the West Coast offense, whatever the heck he wants to call it. So we'll have to wait and see. But look, you don't have to have that big 6'5" guy in there. And you have Evan Ingram,
yeah,
by the way.
Well, I was just going to say, you have him as an option. He could also be lined out as a wide receiver. Barkley could be used as a receiver. We just went over. So they're going to mix and match personnel depending on what the defensive alignment show.
I'll make him wait. Adam in Columbus, Ohio. He's up next. Hi, Adam. How are you?
I'm doing good, guys. What's going on?
What's up, buddy? Right, Adam. Do me a favor. Take us off speakerphone.
Give me 1 second. Is this better?
That is better. Thank you.
All right. No problem. Hey, yeah, I called Friday, and I made a point that I thought the draft did a nice job of balancing the present and the future.
Yeah.
And, I think that's true. One thing I was thinking is that it is a beautiful, beautiful thing when your biggest need just so happens to coincide with the biggest value. And I think that's what happened here. I mean, I would say that Lorenzo Carter and Hernandez were best case scenario wishes in the draft room, realistically, for 2 and 3, and that's what we got.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I think one thing the whole quarterback at 2 crowd is missing is that Hernandez at 2 is a steal, and that really, in my opinion, mitigates any position value risk. Well, not any, but I think it enhances the Barkley pick, and it goes a long way to mitigate. Yeah, we didn't grab Nelson. Hernandez is not Nelson, obviously, but he's damn good. And at 34, the value is tremendous, and he's a plug-and-play guy who can be good. So the margin from Hernandez to Quentin Nelson allows us to roll the dice with a potential GOAT running back. And I just don't think you can look at that number two in a vacuum. I wish people would give more consideration to that. You know, what we did at two and how it enhances number one.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Well, listen, you also have to look at the addition of Nate Solder and Patrick Omame. I mean, all of those things go hand in hand. It's not just the two picks.
This stuff doesn't happen exactly. Yeah. To me, it's like a Hail Mary in some sense, the draft. Because, yeah, you know what you want, but in some sense, you have to get lucky. The pieces have to fall into place in the right manner.
Players need to stay healthy, too. That's another thing.
The receivers have to be where they need to be. The ball has to be where it needs to be. And it's a low percentage play, but you give yourself the best chance by executing. And man, I say, DG, Dave Gettleman, the man executed. I think he brought us to the forefront of running teams in the NFL in two signings and one draft. I love it.
All right. Appreciate the call. Yeah. Thank you, Adam.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Good stuff. And you know, the funny thing is, we thought this was such a deep running back class. I actually think Loletta was a better quarterback than there was a running back available in round four. Because the top of the running backs went away pretty quick. Royce Freeman was the last one to go to the Broncos in round three. But all the other guys, through Kerryon Johnson, were all gone in the second round.
There was a rush on running backs at one point.
In round two.
Yeah.
Top of round two.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's still a great deal of depth at that position. But your point is, once you got to four, there really wasn't much substance there.
Not full-time backs. You still had the Nyheim Hines of the world, the Akram Wadleys of the world, Joe Kelly from Tennessee, those types of guys. But, you know, the Kerryon Johnsons and guys like that, they weren't there anymore.
Be your number one guy perhaps on the depth chart, or at least can handle 15 to 20 carries.
Jay in Brooklyn. What's up, Jay? How are you, buddy?
Hey, guys. How you doing, man?
Doing well, buddy.
Hey, I know the Giants haven't done a great job putting talent around Eli for the past couple of years. I get it. But now that they drafted the running back, they got the wide receiver, they had the tight end, I'm done with the excuses for Eli. I mean, let's be real here. He's made the playoffs once in the last 7 years. He's on his third head coach, fourth offensive coordinator, his second GM in front office. They're running out of stones to overturn with this roster.
Jay, let me say this, I'll be very unequivocal and I'll be clear. Eli Manning had a lot of reasons not to succeed the last few years. With the line in front of him, assuming that they can figure out something at right tackle, which I think they should be able to manage, with the rest of the offensive line and all the weapons, assuming there is health, I agree, he has to play well.
And this is the same guy. You and me both, John, I wanted the quarterback just like you. We saw him in 11. Eli won games for the Giants in 11.
Oh, absolutely.
They had all those fourth quarter comebacks in 11.
Yes. The biggest problem I've seen with Eli then and Eli now is Eli has gone from a guy that win you games to a guy you can win games with.
I think to a certain extent you're right, Jay, but he did have a couple pretty good moments in 16 and fourth quarters where he had some comebacks to win in that 11-5 year, in fairness.
Correct. Again, but again, this is the same guy. He used to win with guys like, you know, Kevin Boss, Jake Ballard, running backs by committee. He has talent everywhere. You put this talent on any other leading quarterback in the NFL, you know what you're going to expect coming out of him. Take injuries aside, you know what you're going to get.
Well, Jay, in fairness, I don't think he's lost anything physically. Like, I don't think he's lost juice on the ball. But you're right. I'm not going to sit here and argue that he's the same player in 18 that he was in 11. I don't think that's fair to compare a 37-year-old Eli to a 31-year-old Eli. I don't think that's fair.
Right. Which is fine, but this is a win-now move.
No, and that's absolutely.
It's a win-now move.
Sure.
It's not going to look good if at the end of the year you have a 1,400-yard rusher, yet you're still out of the playoffs again.
No, I agree. I happen to agree with you 100%.
Well, I mean, I agree to a certain extent. I just don't like to label this as a win-now move. I mean, Saquon Barkley is the type of player that you think is talented enough that whoever is under center is going to be a guy that's going to contribute, period.
Right, but this
is not, let's give Eli 2 more years to try to win a Super Bowl.
Thanks for the call, Jay.
Let's assume they don't make the playoffs. That's one out of the last 8 years with a quarterback.
I'm well aware of the numbers, Jay, but Jay, hold on. What you did not take into consideration when evaluating Eli and all the offense. You didn't say a peep about what happened on defense during that entire tenure.
I didn't hear one word
about evaluating how the defense has fluctuated and how you went 1 year with one of the most dominating defenses in the league, and then you went to the bottom of the rankings. Not one mention. Right. You can't evaluate an NFL team's success rate and whether they get in the playoffs by just looking at the offense. You can't.
No, but
it's unfair.
This is your overall opinion on quarterback. I know your opinion on quarterbacks is you think I get it takes a village. I get that. But he's being paid and he's being treated like a franchise QB. Franchise QBs don't make the playoffs once every 8 years. I'm sorry.
Well, let me ask you this. How many times have the Chargers made the playoffs during that span with Phillip Rivers?
I have no idea. Phillip Rivers is not considered a great, great QB, though.
I'm going to disagree with you there. You and I are going to disagree with that. You and I are going to disagree with that. I think Phillip Rivers is an underrated quarterback, and I think also his talent has fluctuated, and that's why his results are not through the roof.
Yeah, but how many times have the Giants even been competitive over the last 7 years?
Well, define competitive, though. What does that mean?
I mean, most of the last – if you go back to the last 7 years, they got 4-game losing streaks, 6-game losing streaks, 7-game losing streaks. A lot of these seasons, they're out of it by Thanksgiving.
And I'm not disagreeing with you, but record alone does not define whether or not a team is competitive or not. Because, for example, if you even look at this past season, before the guys got hurt, I mean, all of those games were down to the wire, bounce the ball here, miss field goal here. You know, the record could change. That doesn't mean they were a playoff team last year. Don't misinterpret my words. But I don't just look at a record and say a team was non-competitive. That's my point.
Okay, I'm going to give you a real plausible scenario, and I'll get off the line.
Sure.
They improve 4 to 5 games next year, win 7-8 games out of the playoffs. What's the excuse next year for Eli?
I don't think it's necessary. I think it depends how they get there, Jay. What if they're the 7th ranked offense in the league and they win 8 games?
That's different. But I mean, like, right. What does it mean? Well, he needs a right tackle now? Oh, he's mixing that tall.
But Jay, that's my point. Their record might not have to do with Eli. Like, if they're the 5th ranked offense in the league, but the defense stinks and they win 8 games, that means Eli still got more good years left. So it more depends, and Jay, thanks for the call. It depends on Eli plays, not necessarily the record in a vacuum. Now, if we're sitting here, look, and I do think, I'm not going to say it's a win now move, Lance, but I do think if you look at the higher paid players on this roster, for example, Snacks Harrison, Janoris Jenkins, Olivier Vernon, Eli Manning, and simply look at the lengths of their contracts, okay? With that core of players, you're looking at 2 to 3 years. That's the window for that group of players. And, you know, you're not going to generally sign 32 and 33-year-olds to contract extensions that on defense. That's not the way the league works, okay? So you are looking at, I think, at a smaller window for that group of guys. And this team, as Dave Gettleman said, I forget which press conference, no one wants to lose. Of course we're trying to win now. So I do think if you get the 5 years from now and Eli Manning is announcing his retirement and they haven't won a playoff game between now and then, and you look at the overall strategy of the draft and not getting your next franchise quarterback, I understand why somebody would go back and say, you know what? They made a mistake. I get that.
Well, I mean, I certainly can understand that perspective, but I still go back to, you know, Phillip Rivers, and I just brought this up. I mean, they made the playoffs once, John, going back to 2010.
No, but again, I'm not saying
one time.
But again, I'm not saying it's Eli Manning's fault.
I'm just saying, as a team in general,
it would be a disappointing.
The way you labeled it compared to Jay, the
different.
Last caller, it'd be a team disappointment.
Yeah,
it
absolutely.
It wouldn't just be an Eli Manning disappointment.
Correct.
Unless, listen, if Eli goes out there and he throws 25 to 27 interceptions next season, we've got something to talk about.
Correct.
But if Eli and the offense are productive and the defense doesn't maybe meet them halfway,
it's got nothing to do with the quarterback.
There's maybe a reason why they didn't get into the playoffs. You know, just like there have been years where the offense has been really good, the defense hasn't matched it. John, there's been years where the defense has been really good and the offense hasn't matched it.
Correct.
So you got to look at everything. That's my larger point here.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I'm not saying it's Eli Manning disappointment. It's a team disappointment. All right, let's go to Charlie in Portland, Maine. He's our final corner. What's up, Chuckles?
Hey, John. Hey, Lance. Hey, it depends on the pudding, John. Depends on the pudding.
Oh, the proof's going to be in the pudding, Charlie. I don't care if it's rice, tapioca, vanilla, or chocolate.
Leave it to Charlie to argue. Even cliches. Unbelievable. Go ahead, Charlie.
Hey, look.
Fascinated to hear what you have to say today.
I don't know what this last call is talking about. The only guy who played his butt off in the best game in a playoff game in 2016 was Eli Manning.
That is true.
Everybody else dropped passes. The defense got tired, and once DRC went out, it all fell apart.
You're right about that.
The only guy who played 150% was Eli Manning.
You're right.
You give Eli Manning an offensive line, which I've been screaming about for the last 4 years, he is still the Eli Manning, and he will get it done because that's who he is. In the biggest games, he plays the biggest. He did it. He won two Super Bowls, last two-minute drive, MVP, and he's still the same guy. Now that you got a running game and a running back, it's going to help Eli so much more. The only thing I was disappointed in with this draft was not getting a right tackle. I mean, Jones was there, Crosby was there, and we went more D-line.
Yeah, Charlie, I was surprised too, and I'm not sure if you listened to the shows over the weekend, but heck, me and Paul were talking about Jamarco Jones and Crosby in round three, and then they're still sitting there in round five. So, I think Paul and I were also a little bit surprised about that.
Yeah, and I understand he wants a really good D-line rotation. So that tells me that I don't know if they think too much about Mr. Illness. He might be the guy on the outside if these other two guys have come in really who they think
but,
we
But
think
by the
they
way,
are.
But see, it's got to be disappointing to you if these players that have diminished roles, who you love because of the nicknames and those are your talking points, you're not going to have enough material next season.
No, I hope the material.
Are you aware of that?
Yes, I'll
But Charlie, by the way, before you continue on your lovely dissertation, I documented on the screen April 30th, 2018, at 1:05 p.m. Eastern, Charlie says something reasonable when you pointed out about what happened in the playoff game with Eli Manning. So you get a check mark in my book. Very rare occurrence that we've had today, but this
you.
Is a pleasant
Thank
experience.
You,
Go
I
ahead.
Gonna,
yes.
I'm going to write it down in my diary that this was a great day.
Charlie, get out on a high note. Get out on a high note, Charlie.
Be very careful what you say next, but go ahead. Yes.
Hey, look, there is two top 50 free agents left, offensive tackles. One is Austin Howard, and the other one, number 49, is Mr. Will Beatty. Bring one of those two guys in.
I spoke too soon.
As a veteran to compete for right tackle.
There we go. That was short-lived. Okay.
Strike two. Charlie, we got to run, pal. Thanks for the call, man. We'll talk to you later in the week.
All right, Charlie.
Appreciate it. And again, maybe the Giants
started off so good.
And maybe the Giants didn't like Tyrell Crosby and Jamarco Jones.
Where were they on the board?
If they were ranked high, I'm sure they would have taken them. I guess they weren't.
Yeah. I mean, you got to take that into consideration.
Absolutely.
Doesn't mean the players weren't good. It's just in the eyes of the Giants front office, they may not have been as high as the other players.
And there were reports out there that maybe there was a medical deal with Crosby that never got confirmed, so who the heck knows?
Yeah. Speaking of medical conditions, just real quickly, McIntosh did have a brief thyroid issue, but he has since gone on medication to at least handle that, because that was an issue in terms of the weight fluctuation, and Dave Gettleman even brought that up during his press conference.
When you started speaking of medicals, I thought maybe you finally had your condition diagnosed for us.
No, that has been a long-ranging whole production.
How about Paul?
Doctors.
How about Dottino?
I don't even know. We're beyond the point of help for Paul Dottino at this point. So.
You need a team for that,
yes,
right?
Yes, you need a team of consultants.
Right. Lance, good stuff.
Yes, absolutely.
Always a pleasure, folks. Tomorrow we're back for more Big Blue Kickoff at noon on Giants.com, and stay tuned to Giants.com as we continue to break down the Giants draft class. For Lance Meadow, I'm John Schmelk. We'll see you tomorrow on Giants.com. Peace out.
Have a good one.